to a party with me?
No, the game's on. Oh, I almost forgot. I'll be right there.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl.
Do you like sports and don't care who knows? Then CITR Sports needs you. If you like sports, are into radio, or generally just want to have a great time, then come join us. Email our sports coordinator at sports101@citr.ca to find out more, or come by the station in the new sub. See you soon.
Watch, cause I'm the man.
To hear extended interviews and behind-the-scenes chat, go to my website, mariebenard.com, and sign up for my mailing list, mariebenard.com. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to a CITR 101.9 FM program, the Black History Month compilation. This hour has been built to showcase some of the programming CITR broadcasters have done for Black History Month as a part of our celebration of the time, but also in the hopes that we are moving CITR towards more even representation and covering topics of vital worth to the community. First, we have a segment from DJ Denise of Queer FM about the Canadian legacy of Black History Month. Secondly, we have a piece from Zahir Asif on Black Lives Matter Vancouver and the Vancouver Women's March. And then finally, we have an interview between Dora Duber and Barbara Chinaros about the ongoing Van City Theatre Black History Month series. Stay tuned.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Yes, 101.9 FM, CITR, Queer FM. I'm DJ Denise, hanging out with you. Got a little info on Black History Month for you in Canada. During Black History Month, Canadians celebrate the many achievements and contributions of Black Canadians who throughout history have done so much to make Canada a culturally diverse, compassionate, and prosperous nation it is today. Black history in Canada, people of African descent have been a part of shaping Canada's heritage and identity since the arrival of Matthew Da Costa, a navigator and an interpreter whose presence in Canada dates back to the early 1600s. The role of blacks in Canada has not always been viewed as a key feature in Canadian history. There is little mention of those of the Loyalists who came here after the American Revolution and settled in the Maritimes. Or of the many sacrifices made in wartime by Black Canadian soldiers as far back as the War of 1812. Few Canadians are aware of the fact that African people were once enslaved in the territory that is now Canada, or of how those who fought enslavement helped to lay the foundation of Canada's diverse and inclusive society. Black History Month is a time to learn more about these Canadian stories and the many others, the many important contributions of Black Canadians in the settlement, growth, and development of Canada, and about the diversity of Black communities in Canada and their importance to the history of this country. Recognizing Black History Month, the commemoration of Black History Month dates back to 1926, when Harvard-educated African-American historian Carter G. Woodson proposed setting aside a time devoted to honor the accomplishments of African Americans and to heighten awareness of Black history in the United States. This led to the establishment of Negro History Week in 1926. Celebrations of Black history began in Canada also shortly thereafter. During the early 1970s, the week became known as Black History Week. It was expanded into Black History Month in 1976. In December 1995, the House of Commons officially recognized February as Black History Month in Canada, following a motion introduced by the first Black Canadian woman elected to Parliament, the Honorable Jean Austin. The motion was carried unanimously by the House of Commons. In February 2008, Senator David Oliver, the first black man appointed to Senate, introduced the motion to recognize contributions of black Canadians and February as Black History Month. It received a unanimous approval and was adopted. And on March 4th, 2008, the adoption of this motion completed Canada's parliamentary position in Black History Month. So very good, very good. I will continue with some cool music from Quanah Style. Love Will Set You Free. Here we go. 101.9 FM, CITR, Queer FM.
That was DJ Denise. Queer FM airs every Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
Next up, Sahara Saf interviewed Black Lives Matter Vancouver member and organizer Joy Giamfi to find out more about the lack of inclusivity in Saturday's Women's March on Washington and Vancouver. Joy speaks about her reaction to the apology posted by the Women's March on Washington on the Women's March in Vancouver's Facebook page and what needs to be done going forward.
So what was your reaction to the statement issued yesterday afternoon by the organizers of the Women's March in which they apologized for failing to include Black Lives Matter in the movement?
I really appreciate that they had finally taken the time to apologize. I think that was something that was one of the main issues that we were facing. We were asking at least for them to recognize that they had made a mistake, but enough specifically. It was more that they had forgotten about Black and trans voices in organizing the march.
So it was like a general issue of inclusivity.
Yeah, that was one of the main issues, mm-hmm. was that they had just not thought to include some marginalized voices within the women's community.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they adequately addressed that in their apology?
I think they did, but they seem to have focused on Black Lives Matter specifically, mm-hmm. and which, again, I don't think was the main issue. They could have, like, I'm reading the statement right now, and it says that they forgot to include Black Lives Matter, and all they mention is Black Lives Matter, but not really Black women or trans women or disabled women, mm. which I think is something that media outlets have been forgetting to focus on, and not that it's Black Lives Matter should have specifically been involved, but that it's, like, these Black mm-hmm. and trans and disabled women.
Mm-hmm. So just for our listeners, I just want to add that the organizers also deleted a post by Black Lives Matter on the Women's March Vancouver Facebook page. Is that correct?
Yeah, just to correct, we didn't personally post on the event page. Someone mm-hmm. else had posted the link to our statement on the event page. But yes, they had deleted the thread that had hundreds of comments that were including discussion and why Black and trans women should have been included in the march, and trying to let the organizers know that this had been a mistake. Mm-hmm.
So how did that make you feel when they deleted that post?
It was really upsetting because it felt like, well, not felt like, but they were literally erasing all the work that other women and other people were doing in the post to try to educate the organizers, and it kind of just felt like, oh, we made a mistake, but we don't want to hear what we've done wrong, so we're just going to delete it to forget about it, mm-hmm. which, that, like, deleting it is not going to make the problem go away.
So, in your view, why didn't the Women's March organizers include multiple voices, especially given that the Trump administration is going to disproportionately affect people of color?
I think, honestly, it's probably just something that they forgot, and which sucks because that's one of a really big problem with white feminism, is that they're all for women's rights, and I am too, but they seem to forget the mm-hmm. marginalized women within these women, the Black women that are going to be affected by Trump's administration, the trans women, the disabled are going to be affected. So, yeah, I understand that they made a mistake, and they have also mentioned that they had time constraints, which, again, I understand, but, like, those aren't good enough excuses. Organizing an event is difficult, but it's up to the organizers to seek out the voices that should be represented.
The Women's March on Washington was arguably more diverse. There were women like Tamika Mallory, Linda Sarsour, Carmen Perez, just to name a few. Why didn't we see this kind of diversity here?
That was probably a mistake from the organizers. They had just, mm-hmm. in their organizing, had just simply forgot, which is part of the larger problem, is that when planning a march like this, they had not thought about the further marginalized voices. And it's interesting because the original organizers of the Women's March are, I believe, an Arab woman and a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And they would, like, I imagine that they would have wanted to see diversity in every march and not just in the in the main one. Mm-hmm.
So it was almost unintentional.
Yeah, I do believe that it was unintentional. Intentional, but they had further made it an issue when they had erased the thread. Like, that was intentional, or also when, after the erasure of the thread, people commenting on the event page, they were sort of, like, censored. Like, you couldn't just have a comment anymore. It had to be approved. So that was intentional, mm-hmm. I believe.
So, in your view, how can we have more meaningful and effective conversations about inclusivity in movements, especially in Canada, ones that encompass, you know, intersecting race, class, and sexual orientation identities?
Well, I think the main thing is to listen to the people that are from these intersections, like, listen to the Black women, listen to the trans women and Indigenous people. Women of color, when they're telling you these things, because we had a lot of issues when posting the statement and also when I saw that it was posted on the event page, where a lot of white women were commenting and not seeing why this was an issue. And that's one of the things that is frustrating, is that when you're not even listening to these voices, it shows how much you don't really value intersectional feminism.
Have they adequately addressed deleting that post? Because it seems like they've apologized for not including Black Lives Matter in the movement, but they haven't addressed deleting that post.
Yeah, in my opinion, they haven't really adequately apologized. They have apologized, but they haven't done it adequately. Like, for example, it is the Women's March on Washington that actually posted this apology on the event page. Nothing has come from the Vancouver section themselves, from my understanding. So it almost seems as if the Women's March in Washington, like the Canada section, was like, oh, this smaller section of us has made a mistake, we have to fix that, rather than the Vancouver organizers themselves trying to fix the mistake on their own, if that makes sense.
So going forward, how can we make sure intersectional feminism actually materializes in movements like the Women's March?
Yeah, I think it's about, again, listening to the voices that are further marginalized and actually, I guess, like, not just talking about it, but doing something about it. Like, we were really grateful to the people that were commenting on the thread, giving, like, having concrete discussion and thoughts as to how this the march could have been more diverse. So I guess more action and less just speaking. Mm-hmm.
So also in your statement on your website, the one that was released the night before the march, you also mentioned how there are people in Canada who claim that there is no racism, and you've received a number of threats online. So where is this narrative that there's no racism in Canada coming from?
I think this narrative comes from Canadians comparing themselves to the state. It's like, oh, we're not as bad as the state, so there can't be racism here, which is absolutely not the case at all. If you had heard of the KKK posters being distributed in Richmond and I think perhaps New West, like that area, like that shows that racism does exist here, and it's not just an American issue. It is definitely a Canadian issue, and the fact that people want to say no, this is an issue, and majority of the time, this comes from white people saying, no, this is not an issue. It, again, just further highlights that racism, where white people don't want to accept that people of color here do face racism.
We also saw this issue of diversity and inclusivity earlier last year during the Pride March as well. So does it feel like, you know, there are definitely parallels between what happened there and what happened over here with the Women's March. Does it feel like we're actually, you know, growing and learning from these situations?
I think it is a balance. I don't know if you heard recently that Black Lives Matter Toronto was able to get Toronto Pride to not allow the police floats in the parade, I believe.
Yes.
So that felt like, okay, something is happening. But then to have this reaction from the Women's March, it starts to feel like, well, I thought we were going somewhere. So I think there's always ups and downs. We have our wins and our losses. So definitely felt like a loss.
In the statement that was posted on the Black Lives Matter Movement website, you also talked about the opportunity that Canada has to create a counter-narrative to what's happening in the United States. So moving forward, how can we ensure that multiple voices and perspectives are included in crafting an effective and meaningful counter-narrative?
Yeah, so I think it's about reaching out to those underrepresented voices. Like, I remember reading the comments on the post after our statement was posted, and a lot of people are saying, well, it's an open march, like anyone could have come, which is not the main issue. The main issue is that no trans or black women were meaningfully invited to speak. So yes, of course, it's an open march, anyone could have attended, but it's that they didn't think to ask these voices to speak. They didn't have the space for these voices to meaningfully convey the issues that they're facing. So it's about actually reaching out to these underrepresented and marginalized groups and saying, here, we want you to speak and tell us what we can do or what is happening? How can we fix it? The two main issues with the march were, first, that the organizers hadn't thought to consider Black and trans women on the speakers list, which is like meaningfully inviting people. And then the second issue was when our statement was released, the thread containing all these meaningful comments were also deleted.
In the statement released by the Women's March organizers, they've said, quote, "We have reached out to Black Lives Matter today and hope that we can work together to provide meaningful inclusion in the days and weeks ahead." So will you be meeting up with them? Will you be kind of collaborating or having discussions with them about how the march ensued?
Yeah, so they have reached out to us, and we're thinking of having a meeting with them soon, and we will also be including third parties and moderators as well, so that there can be like a balance.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
No problem at all.
That was Sahir Asib with Black Lives Matter Vancouver. News 101 airs every Friday on CITR at 5 p.m. Finally, we have an interview between Dora Duber and Barbara Chirinos about the ongoing Van City Theatre Black History Month series.
Now, when you were starting out as a writer, you were black, impoverished, homosexual. You must have said to yourself, gee, how disadvantaged can I get?
Well, no, I thought I hit the jackpot.
Oh, great.
It was so outrageous you could not go any further, you know. You had to find a way to use it.
Curated by Barbara Chirinos in partnership with VIF Van City Theater, the annual Black History Month film series shines a spotlight on African North American film and history. This year's program encompasses music, political protest, spiritual, emotional, enterprise, and endeavor. The centerpiece of Black History Month at Van City Theatre is the exclusive Vancouver premiere of the Academy Award-nominated documentary I Am Not Your Negro, screening from February 24th. Other highlights include Julie Dash's seminal Daughters of the Dust, the music films Molly Blues and Sign of the Times, and a new Canadian documentary about the untold history of Black hockey players, Soul on Ice.
Hey, this is Barbara Chirinos, Executive Director of the Granville Island Cultural Society, and we're testing sound levels and everything else right now.
That is perfect.
Okay.
Cool. So I guess we'll just get started. First question that I have is, you started this festival 5 years ago after moving from New York City. Can you speak a little bit on your journey in establishing the whole project?
Yes. Actually, I've been in Vancouver for, it's getting ready to be 15 years now, believe it or not. And while I've been here, I've been working quite a bit in arts and culture. I've been the managing director of the Folk Music Festival for a few years. I also programmed events for the Golden Ears Bridge. I actually programmed all of the entertainment for the opening of that bridge. I also, oh my gosh, I've done quite a bit, managed theaters for the Vancouver International Film Festival, and was one of the, was actually a founding managing director, organizer for the Home Ground Festival on the downtown east side. So I've done a lot of things in between that as well. And while I was working for the Vancouver International Film Festival and the Van City Theater, I had a wonderful relationship with them. And while I was there, I noticed that there was no Black History Month film series. And I essentially said to the artistic director at the time, who was Alan Franey, that we needed to have a Black History Month film festival. And he said, sure, sounds good to me. Go right ahead and go ahead and do it. So with my background in festivals, as well as being a filmmaker for over 10 years when I lived in New York, and then moving here, along with some of the resources and connections that I had, the festival was started, and I actually started programming with a partner who is the programmer for the Van City Theater all year round, Tom Charity. We started putting together films that we thought would be appropriate for the film series, and it's been in working order and gaining audiences ever since we started 5 years ago.
Awesome. What are some criteria that you have when curating the films?
You know, it's interesting. We look for films that are classic or will be classic, films that are iconic, films that are exceptional. And one thing for me particularly that I look for, we definitely look for films that speak to the moment because it makes it more realistic for anyone that wants to attend the festival. Essentially, that's what art is supposed to do anyway. But I also look for strong Canadian content because of the ready availability of films with people from the African diaspora coming out of Africa or coming out of Europe or coming out of the United States, where people have an opportunity to see these films on cable or television, or they can rent them, or they come into the theaters typically, or they may have short runs. So we look for films that people possibly will not have an opportunity to see, but we also look for strong Canadian content because we live in Canada. And there are not a lot of films regarding Black History Month with strong Canadian content, but the number is growing, which is a wonderful thing. So specifically this year, we're bringing the film Soul on Ice, which is made by a Black Canadian, originally from Toronto, but he lives in Edmonton now. And because of his love of the sport of hockey, he put together a film that looks at the acknowledgments and contributions that have been made by Black professional hockey players, but we also follow a couple of really young people who love the sport. And if you're Canadian, you love hockey. You just do. So it is a really strong film that is wonderfully being sponsored by the Vancouver Canucks as well as the NHL because they really support the film because of the strong Canadian content and because of the love of hockey that is just told in this wonderful story. And it's a free screening.
I saw that. I'm very excited. I'll definitely be there.
Oh, wonderful.
So was there a theme shaping your curation or that you usually take into account when curating the festival? Or is it kind of a free-for-all of celebrating Black content in Canada?
You know, it is a combination of things. Lots of times I am also on the, it's not a board, but it is a committee of a number of African Canadians, as well as I'm an African American, but people that live here in Vancouver that work with the city of Vancouver to proclaim February as Black History Month. And we've been doing that as well for 6 years together as a committee. And typically there is a theme, and I try to use the theme that's part of Proclamation Day as a way to set off what the theme is going to be for the films that we're going to show. Sometimes that works out, depending on the availability of the films. This year, not necessarily, because this year, for the city of Vancouver, youth and the acknowledgments and contributions that youth have made when it comes to Black History Month was the theme. And I wasn't able to get a lot of films in that category. So considering what's happening all over the world as a result of the election in the United States, I decided that the theme was going to be persistence. And each of these films really focuses on persistence. And I say persistence pretty much based on the Senator Elizabeth Warren out of Massachusetts and her persistence to constantly address and to face and to challenge what is happening with the present government in the United States. So persistence is definitely the theme. We look at the first film that was shown, which was Daughters of the Dust, that was written, directed, and produced by an African-American woman by the name of Julie Dash. Her iconic film, Daughters of the Dust, was the first film that was produced and written and directed by an African-American woman that was released theatrically in North America and then various parts of the world. So her persistence to be a filmmaker and to get that film out, a feature-length film, is a monumental feat. So she's the first example of persistence, along with the others, such as the film Birth of a Nation by Nate Parker, also a film about persistence, particularly the story itself in terms of rebellion. Also, I Am Not Your Negro by James Baldwin, also a film about persistence. So all of the films do address themselves to the area of persistence.
How has the recent election changed the need for Black celebratory festivals, even within Canada and especially within the States?
I think what it does is, in a good way, people are more vocal. People are more, there's more exposure as a result of resistance. People are also using this to remind the world that people from African descent have been making contributions and have been celebrating the contributions that they've made for years. But it is now a way to make sure that those contributions are forefront, that people know that these contributions have been made, and that the contributions are not just for Black people. I mean, it's very, very important for that to be known. But it's because Black people are citizens of the world, and the contributions that are made in all sorts of industries, as well as arts and culture, is a benefit for us all as being citizens of the planet. But unfortunately, the contributions that have been made by African Americans and African Canadians, or those from from African descent, are not as readily recognized, so they're not as readily celebrated as contributions that we hear about from other community groups. So I think, going back to your question, what it does is it makes people more vigilant in terms of making sure that the contributions are recognized and acknowledged. So I think that there are quite a number more Black History Month events that are going on around North America, but a lot more in the Vancouver area. There are Black History Month events that are going on in Richmond, in New West, in Surrey, as well as Vancouver and other parts of the GVRD.
Why is it important for the celebration of Black culture and history to take place specifically in Vancouver?
Well, because a number of Black people, including myself, we're always kind of looked at as the other, doubtless of the contributions that we've made. And I'm not saying that everybody does not recognize us, but there's a number of people that don't. And, you know, to be honest, we don't really have big numbers here. So it is important that for any community, and not specifically Vancouver, but here in Vancouver, doubtless of who you are, if there are contributions that are being made and you live in a city and it's a significant contribution, it should be recognized. Just as contributions and, just as any other contributions from any community should be recognized. So it's important in Vancouver, but it's important everywhere.
Totally. What did you expect from the festival when you started it up? How are you hoping it would grow when you started the project?
Well, because I was an independent film producer when I was back in New York for over 10 years, I had an opportunity to do a lot of traveling, going to film festivals in Paris and Brazil and London and various parts of the United States, Los Angeles, Miami, Charleston, and in all of those cities. I mean, I wasn't only invited for Black History Month festivals. I was invited as an independent producer for films because of the films that the company I was running with my business partner called Red Carnelian Films, the films that we had created were being invited all over the world. And what I would notice in a number of these cities and got a chance to meet a number of people is that there were specific films that did celebrate Black History Month. And then I moved here to Vancouver and I noticed that a film series that did that, that celebrated black films as well as acknowledgments, was not here, although the black population was growing and continues to grow. And a number of people from the black community, it was the discussion that we would have, but the discussions that I would hear is, oh, somebody should put on a film series. Oh, why isn't there a film series? And that's why I just decided, considering the number of festivals that I had been to, considering the number of festivals that I either helped to create here or helped to organize or helped to manage the logistics of, as well as being a significant staff member as part of the Vancouver International Film Festival, a number of resources just brought themselves together where it seemed to be the appropriate time. So what I was hoping was to put together a film series that helped to celebrate stories that have come out of the black community, out of the African community, stories that reminded and acknowledged and celebrated stories that either we grew up with or stories that were being told currently that should be acknowledged and should be, as I mentioned, should be celebrated. So I thought all of those resources coming together just seemed to be the perfect time. And what I was hoping is, I was hoping, and it is happening, that the black community would come out and see these films, and it would be a wonderful way to meet up, speak with people, and see stories with people that look like you, which is wonderful, but it's also a way for our neighbors to learn more about us. That's what film festivals do. It provides discourse, it provides discussion, it provides insight, and it provides historical content as well as fictional content that provide people a platform so that they can come together, get to know each other, or just talk. And that's exactly what this film series is doing.
And exceptionally well. I love
it. Well, thank you.
Oh, no worries. How would you like or expect the festival to expand? Or are you kind of happy with the size that it is?
Well, you know, how I'd like it to expand, it has expanded a little bit because the festival did originally start at the Van City Theater. And we typically would program films based on the availability of the theater on Monday nights. Those were nights that always seemed to be free. So that worked out. But then the audiences started growing, as well as the number of films that were making themselves available to us from all over the world, actually. So I was able to, last year, have the film series grow just a little by bringing a couple of screenings to Granville Island. So I used to be on the staff of the Van City Theater and the Vancouver International Film Festival, and now I'm the executive director of the Granville Island Cultural Society. So we manage three theaters, and we had an opportunity last year to bring screenings to Granville Island. And so we brought two films. They were both free, and both of the screenings were really, really successful. One in particular was an event that I put together with Vanessa Richards, a wonderful cultural icon here in Vancouver, and the name of the event was Afro Hair Savoir Faire. And that came about because, just like most black women here in Vancouver, when I moved here, I was really shocked in terms of the limited availability for an esthetician to do my hair. And black women wear their hair in so many different ways, between straightening, locks, naturals, If you want to get a blowout, you've got to go one place. If you need to get your locks twisted, you have to possibly go someplace else. And the resources were so far and few in between. And Vanessa and I thought that it would be great to essentially come up with an event that celebrated black hair, brought together estheticians that specialize in black hair, and hopefully that event would help to expand resources for people, for black people that live here, because the two estheticians that I started using when I first moved here were fantastic and wonderful, but they retired and moved away, which meant I had to find somebody else to do my hair. And it's like, well, how do you do that other than talking to people or going online? And some of the resources were just really too far away from me. So we brought together Afro Hair Savoir Faire, and it's going to happen again this year, February 19th at the Waterfront Theater, where we'll see a film that was made in Brooklyn. The name of the film is In Our Heads About Our Hair, and it talks about all the different ways that black women celebrate, style their hair, and whether it's natural or whether it's straight, and to find out what's happening currently. And after that, as we did last year, we open up the floor to questions from people in the audience about resources. Or there's one particular poignant story of a biracial family that came. The father stood up in a room with a majority of black people in it and asked, how does he comb his daughter's hair without hurting her? And how does he provide options and resources for her so that he's not hurting her when he combs her hair? And all of the hands that went up in the audience to provide this family with resources and with comfort to say, you know what, it's okay. We've got you. We've got all kinds of solutions for you. And it was a beautiful, beautiful moment. So there were biracial families that were there, and there were also Caucasian families that have black children that were also there with the same question. And then we had the estheticians who are experts. That are joining us again this year that also answer the question from a professional point of view versus anecdotal stories. And after the Q&A, we then have a section where we then have demonstrations in terms of what's being done with hair currently in the GVRD from these estheticians. So there's Ice Cold Cut Barbershop. They're coming from Commercial Drive. We have Junior's Barbershop that's coming from, he's over on Davie Street. And then we have a couple of independent estheticians that are coming in as well that will teach you how to blow out your hair or whatever needs to be done. So that's also a fun part because people get a chance to walk around. They talk to the esthetician, they get to see how things are being done, and hopefully it broadens their resource base when it's time to get their hair did, as I say.
It's very thorough. I can imagine.
We try.
That must be so, so informative just for anyone there.
Well, it's informative, but it's also fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's lots of fun because many of the Vancouverites who are born here have lived here, believe it or not, for a few generations, and there are a number of them, have learned what the resources are, or they learn how to do their hair on their own. But for those who come from points east and points south, points east for me, because I'm originally from New York City, when I moved here, it was really a daunting task, especially from the fact that I came from a place where to get your hair done, you know, if I either fell out with my hairdresser or if I wanted to do something new, finding an esthetician was no big deal. It was, you know, there was somebody either across the street or around the corner, or I had friends that could essentially refer me someplace. But when I moved here, to find them, as I had mentioned before, was really, really difficult. And I knew that I could not have been the only person that was in that position. And that was confirmed when it was Vanessa Richards who actually came up with the idea, and then we put the whole thing together. And by the number of people that showed up, just to even talk and hear what other people say, as well as seeing the films, it was a great community gathering moment, but it's also one that's very inclusive. And I have to say that all of the film series is Black History Month, are also very, very inclusive. If you get a chance to come to any of the remaining films, you'll see that the audience is very, very mixed, which is wonderful for me.
Do you have any films that you were especially excited about in this year's lineup?
Oh, my gosh. I'm excited about all of them, and we're midway through. But what is remaining is definitely tonight, which is February 13th, we're showing Mali Blues, which is a film out of Africa, essentially out of Mali, and it talks about Mali being one of the birthplace of the blues itself. But it also takes a look at four musicians who live in Mali that now are trying to create music while Sharia law and fundamentalist Islamic rules are now being put into place, which, of course, discourages dancing as well as music. So we're looking at how they can continue to create music while these issues are those that they have to face. So that's tonight at 7 o'clock at the Van City Theater, but also the film Loving, which is not a fictionalized account, but it is an account of the film, of a story of an interracial couple that got together in the 50s. Their last name was Loving, and unfortunately at that time in Virginia, being an interracial couple was illegal. So it deals with their personal as well as legal battles that they had to fight just so that they could be together. And that's on February 20th. And it is a beautiful, beautiful story. It also has received an Oscar nomination for the actress who plays Mildred Loving. Her name is Ruth Negga. And it is one of two of the films that have Oscar nods this year that's part of the film series. It's the first time we've actually had films that have Oscar noms that are actually going to be shown at this year's Oscars.
Wow.
And that same night, yeah, we're really amazed about, we're really happy. also, the film Birth of a Nation, which of course has its controversy, but we're really excited to bring that because the last time it came to Vancouver, it was part of the Vancouver International Film Festival, but that was the last time anyone in Vancouver had the opportunity to see the film on the large screen. And I thought it was important to bring the film back because it is essentially about the uprisings that took place back, of course, during the times of slavery, but told through a person of color, told by a black man. So that is really, really important in terms of the perspective. And, of course, we're really excited about I Am Not Your Negro, the film written by James Baldwin, but directed and assembled by the absolutely fantastic filmmaker Raoul Peck. So that's going to be amazing, as well as Soul on Ice, which is coming up on February 27th. So I'm excited about all of the films that are remaining in the series to be screened.
Are there any films that you weren't able to fit into the lineup this year that you wish that you had been able to?
Yeah, the film about Shirley Chisholm, Unbossed. I really wanted to put that film in. And Shirley Chisholm was essentially the first woman to seriously run a presidential campaign for the United States. She ran as a candidate for the President of the United States back in the 70s. She was a member of Congress back at the time, and I am fortunate enough to have met her when I was a child because she was my congressperson. And it was an amazing time, and she was an amazing politician and woman. And I really wanted to bring that film in, but unfortunately, we just didn't have enough space to bring that film in. And I thought perhaps, even though I think it's a really important story, I think that people were possibly a little burnt out with politics, considering yeah. what's happening every few minutes. There's a tweet with something coming out of the state. So although I think it's an important film and a really well-done film, I may have to bring it back at another time. And also looking at bringing in more African films as well as animation, because there are some beautiful, absolutely stunning animated features that are coming out of France, as well as coming out of Africa and coming out of Nigeria, that are specifically stories told from a perspective of a black person. And we don't see many stories, many animated stories that are done by people from African descent. So unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to put those in, but hopefully for Family Day next year, I'll be able to do so.
Just one final question. It's a little more general than the festival itself, but so Oscars So White has been a kind of an issue that's popped up, especially last year. It was really big. And this year there are a lot more just like black actors and actresses being recognized by the Academy. Mm-hmm. Can you just speak a little bit on that as a filmmaker and as a black woman who is so involved in the film industry?
Do you mean speak to the reversal from last year or to speak to Oscars So White?
Literally anything. I would just love to hear your thoughts.
Well, Oscars So White really starts from even before the Oscars. The fact that there are many stories that are about women, stories that are about black women, black people, stories about Asian women, stories other than white that are being told or have the potential of being told that just were not being done. So the Oscars being so white last year was going to happen because stories with people of color or stories that are about women really were not being done. And a lot of them were not being done because the studio system, for the most part, looks at films, and this is just my opinion, looks at films in terms of how they're going to be distributed and whether or not tickets are going to be sold. And for the most part, it's easier to go back to the formula or to go back to films or the type of films that they know sell. So it's easier to go ahead and pick those because, you know, Friday the 13th, 206, is easier to do because they know that Friday the 13th, number 205, still sold tickets. So they'd rather greenlight that and then be able to sell distribution after the tickets are sold through videos, and it's easier to go with things that are going to be sold, that are have already sold. So that is what has been the trend in terms of Oscar So White or Oscar So Male, as I'd like to say, because there are plenty of fantastic stories of people of color and women. And I don't want to leave out, of course, our transgenders, brothers and sisters, because there are fantastic stories out there as well that have not been told. So as a result of the backlash, it is fantastic that there are more stories that are being told from a different perspective. And using the film Hidden Figures is a perfect example. It is a perfect example because it is blowing up box office numbers all over the world because of the exceptional story, but it also proves you can put out a story that has to do with black women and people are going to buy tickets because it's about the story. It is always about the story. And it proves that there is a market that is out there where people are going to buy tickets. So that is what is important about Hidden Figures. And it is wonderful that the backlash was created. So now there are more stories with people, from people from different perspectives from what we're always used to seeing. And this trend must continue. It actually should get bigger because just because you create stories from a different perspective doesn't mean you should stop making your Sharknado. It doesn't mean you should stop making your the next version of King Kong or the next version of Tarzan. It doesn't mean you should stop that. It means you should continue to do stories from there as well as from the perspective that has not been discovered or has yet to be discovered fully. And it's just going to make it better for everybody. More tickets are going to be sold. More stories are going to be told. I'd love to see a story from the perspective of a woman who is in her 60s and what her story has been and what her story is about. The woman could be a woman of color. I'd love to see stories, more stories from our indigenous community, because there are wonderful stories that are there as well. We have been so underrepresented when it comes to stories that reflect the countries that we live in. And that's what we need. It makes us all better people, I think.
I totally agree. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. Is there anything that you feel like you wanted to touch on a little bit that we didn't get to talk about as much?
I really just want people to come and take a look. The James Baldwin piece is absolutely masterful. It is something that you will read, I mean, not read, you will see. And if you knew who James Baldwin was before and possibly had forgotten him, this will reawaken your love and appreciation of this man's work. And that's exactly what this film is doing. He is able to take all of everything that's going on in the planet and with laser precision structure it so that we can understand our place on the planet and what we can do to help change it. So that is really, really an important film. I really hope that people purchase tickets for that, but I do want them to come and see the other films as well, because you may not get a chance to see them again in a collective setting. And that's the great thing about going to the theater, appreciating and sharing and experiencing stories in a group of people that you possibly may not know and have the opportunity to have a conversation with them afterwards just to learn. So come and see all the films. And if I have to, would love to say again, the Afro Hair Savoir Faire is a free event. All you've got to do is come to the GICulturalSociety.org's website to get to Afro Hair Savoir Faire, so you can RSVP for your free ticket. Also, Soul on Ice, also a free event, so you can bring the family and come and see hockey at its best and get to discover the black players that have been playing in the NHL since the 1960s, and you will be amazed at the art of hockey, a true, true Canadian story.
I'm so excited. I will definitely be there.
I hope so. You got to make your reservations, and you can do that online also at vif.org. So
cool.
Please do.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Okay, Dora. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Oh, you too. Thanks. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Dora Duber of CITR's Real World with Barbara Shinneros, the director of the Van City Theater's Black History Month series. You can catch The Real World, dedicated to movies, every Friday at 11 a.m. All their episodes this month have been dedicated to Black History Month, so make sure to have a listen. Thank you for joining us this week for another hour of CITR Black History Month special programming. Tune in again next week from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, or find the podcast online at citr.ca. Coming up now, we have a live broadcast from DURC, adjacent to Oppenheimer Park in Vancouver's downtown east side. DURC is the Drug Users Resource Center and one of the organizations at the center of a crisis that has been disproportionately disastrous for the vulnerable populations that call the area home. We're broadcasting live from DURC in advance of the National Homelessness Marathon, which starts at 3 p.m. Our aim is to provide a media platform when media is too often exclusive and inaccessible, and to center the voices of those who call this community home. Stay tuned.
CITR and BC Black History Awareness present Black History Month. We're featuring stories about extraordinary Black Canadians. One such individual is John Craven Jones, the first teacher on Salt Spring Island. There was no school on Salt Spring Island, so Mr. Jones taught the children wherever there was space, in sheds or in family homes. He traveled back and forth between the schools on the island because it was too dangerous for the children to travel alone with cougars on the island. Jones was one of only 16 public school teachers in the entire province. Most surprisingly, he taught without being paid. The families were happy and eager to ensure he had whatever he needed so that he would stay, providing him with clothing, produce from the gardens, eggs, meat, and poultry. John Craven Jones continued teaching on Salt Spring Island until 1875, when he moved back to Ohio. He taught for another 20 years and then retired as a farmer. This has been a Black History Month PSA from CITR 101.9 FM and BC Black History Awareness.
Are you here because of me?
No.
I am here because of your light. Planets reach for immortality.
You are listening to a CITR 101.9 FM program in Black History Month compilation. This hour has been built to showcase some of the programming CITR broadcasters have done for Black History Month as a part of our celebration of the time, but also in the hopes that we are moving CITR towards more even representation and covering topics of vital worth to the community. First, we have a segment from DJ Denise of Queer FM about the Canadian legacy of Black History Month. Secondly, we have a piece from Sahir Asif on Black Lives Matter Vancouver and the Vancouver Women's March. And then finally, we have an interview between Dora Duber and Barbara Chinaros about the ongoing Van City Theatre Black History Month series. Stay tuned.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hydra CM, the CM, the CIA, and the Scaculia to lead in for Musqueam.